When you're young, do you have any expectation that the regime would fall apart one day?
No, I didn't say that. but I think maybe it's because of my personal character, because I'm not very optimistic. But I think that at the time, I think it looked like regime was quite strong. But some people, I think nobody actually predicted that. Nobody predicted that would happen so quickly and so easily in our country. I think in 1989, I think after the demonstrations in Prague, I think then I think we had hope that something may change. Yeah. I think that year 1989, we could see a lot of relaxation, that also people were allowed to travel to Rome because there was beatification of a Czech saint, Saint Agnes. And the communist regime allowed, I don't know, maybe 10,000 people to go to Italy. So I think that was big relaxation. And after we came, and of course I took a part in it. And after we came back, it was 17th of November 1989, and there was students' demonstration started in Prague, and then I think we saw that something is changing.
If these changes never happened, how would you expect your life in Czechoslovakia right now?
I think I would have left. Yeah.
Right.
I think yeah. I think it's just the thing that you can't travel. You can't. I would not like my children to go through the same thing, through the same education I had. I would like to give them better chance. Yeah, I think even when we went to Italy, I told you the Saint Agnes beatification, we were all supposed to return, but it crossed our mind. Why don't we stay here? You know, just why don't we apply for political asylum? But I think because of our families and yeah, we decided to go back.
Another question that I think our friends in Hong Kong are very keen to learn from you is that you survived the communist education, and apparently you are not being brainwashed. So how can you manage to do that?
I think it's mainly because of my family, because we were always talking very freely at home. And also, we have a group of friends, and we knew that among our friends, we can say everything, we can be honest. And I also had my group of friends at school, maybe three, four, five of us, who were not going with the mainstream. And then I think with Catholic Church, I think it played very important role at the time because the underground church was directly offering alternative to the official narrative. Yeah? So basically, they were, I think they were not political in the sense that they would call for end of communism, but definitely they offered you some kind of spiritual alternative, kind of like some solace in prayers and this unofficial underground church. I think played very important role in sustaining a lot of people and their morals and their yeah, will to live. If I can say that.
Do you think the regime deliberately tolerated these underground churches to loosen the control and to pacify the people a little bit, or is just out of their capacity to eradicate all these?
I don't know. I think it's a very good question because, from what I remember, for example, when I was a teenager, I started to be like a group leader of the young children, and we were preparing for summer camps, so we had summer camps, and I think only once we were raided by police when I was there as a kid. Maybe I was maybe 8 or 10 years old, and our camp was raided by police because it was an illegal camp. It was we were camping under tents, and there were maybe 50 children, so I think that was very obvious. It could be seen from afar. So yeah, so a lot of things were going on. And we were going every year for those camps, and a whole year we were having meetings. Every month we had a meeting of the group leaders. It was usually in some private settings, or and the underground church. They also they had their own properties. They were it was usually in the name of one of the church member. So the recreation activities, and also we had religious ceremonies there as well. So I don't know whether it was so well hidden or whether it was tolerated. I'm not so sure, because I think from outside it looked like family gatherings, you can say, yeah? That if somebody was not inside, you could not say what was going on in that house or in that building. So I'm not sure whether it was tolerated or whether. Because I think it was not that well hidden. I think because, especially the summer camps, I think, yeah. So I don't know answer to the question, but I think the priests who very underground church, there were priests who were not allowed to. You need a special state permit to become to be a priest in official church, and these priests they permit was taken away, so they could not practice as priests. So they were either retired or they had some jobs, and in the spare time they were doing his religious duties. So I think there are these kind of people, and also. Some of them, I remember, they told us how they were persecuted in 1950s. That they were sent to uranium mines, and so often their health was not very good because they really suffered in during their prison time. So it was 1950s, and now I'm talking about 1980s. So 30 years later, they were old gentlemen, but they're still. I think according to Catholic Church, they were still priests. But they just didn't have permission. They didn't have permit to be official priests in official church.
Oh, I see. So besides the churches, the civil society just apparently didn't exist at all.
I think it did, but I think it was, I think mainly in big cities, I would say, among the intellectuals. I think even in big cities, I think the church, underground church, played important role. But I think in big cities, you have also people who were writers, philosophers. So they have some kind of like meetings of friends in somebody's home. So, and I think when I got to Prague, it was still to university. It was still during communism. So I knew already the underground church. So I really wanted to meet the philosophers, or you can say the other civic society activists. But I didn't manage to get anywhere because yeah, I think. It was very difficult. I think the very close ranks, and I was not. I think I would have to be introduced by some of the people who, and yeah. So I think it was very. I think that was very secretive. But I think even then, police often raided these kind of meetings, and these people were arrested. Yeah.
I've just been back from Bulgaria, and I was told that during the communist era, even though it's extremely suppressive, the regime has deliberately created a writers' organization and invites the elitist members to join so that they can voice out some of the seemingly dissident voices without taking any risk because they are being paid in a very handsome manner. So the regime used to use this kind of existence to justify the Western world that not so oppressive, and we're part of the global community. Is it the same in Czechoslovakia?
Yeah, I think actually it is not so black and white in Czechoslovakia, or it's not that simple when I think about it. Like you mentioned writers, a lot of writers were Communist Party members before, and they Because of their beliefs, not because they were forced to become members. And then after 1968, many of them left Communist Party, so they were like disgraced members of Communist Party, but they are still very active, very active in political life, you can say, but underground. So I think there is a lot of writers who were Communist Party members before, and then left Communist Party but still kept writing. And a lot of people who were in political elite, at some point of their life, they were Communist Party members.
Which means they can have the flexibilities to say something that they are believing in without taking the real risk in the society.
I'm not sure because then I think there's another category of people, and we are learning about it only now, who we thought they were dissidents and they were working that they were working against Communist Party, but now we are learning that actually they were cooperating and they were snitching on their colleagues. So I think that's very disappointing because there are some people who we held in very high regard as dissidents who were fighting against Communist Party, but now we are learning that actually they were cooperating with Communist Party and they were informants. So I think that's also quite complicated. Just to give you an example, we had, the communism fell more than 30 years ago. Last year we had an election, presidential election, and it was a highly anticipated presidential election because our last president was extremely unpopular, and so people were wanted change. The two final candidates were both former Communist Party members. This is just unbelievable. After 30 years, we can't find somebody who was not tainted by cooperation or being a member of Communist Party. So one of them was a Communist Party member who was convicted with working with a secret police, and the other one was a professional military personnel who was trained to be intelligence officers for Warsaw Pact and for Soviet Union. And this is our president today.
So
So
he
it tells you.
made any confessions?
Any what?
Confessions regarding the past, the history.
Yeah, he said that he was I'm not sure how he tries to explain it, but because this is unexplainable, it's not only that he was a Communist Party member, but he was a Communist Party leader, like a leader of the Communist Party local organization, and he was trying to be a spy, basically for Soviet Union, for Warsaw Pact. How can you justify that? I think it's so of course, I think he said he comes clean. He admits everything, and he changed. He's a different person. And the first candidate, he denies that. He denies that he was cooperating with secret police and that he was informant. So one is denying it, one is admitting it. Does it make difference? I think that past they can't change. They were both Communist Party members and not just ordinary members. They were very high up in the communist hierarchy.
Which means people don't really care because he's being elected.
That's very bizarre because the people who we still have people today who are you can say very nostalgic about communist regime because they had a lot of advantages, and if they were Communist Party members, their life was very very good. So there are people who are nostalgic, mainly older people, and then we have also young communists who said they are reformed communists, they are different, but they never actually distance themselves from the past. So I think that's very problematic. And we have also people who are fiercely anti-communist, people who emigrated and they came back, or also people who became firstly anti-communist after communism fell. So during communism they were cooperating, but now it is because they it can get them political points that they are anti-communists, so they are fiercely anti-communist. And these people, some of them, influential people who are fiercely anti-communist, they were supporting this kind of former communist military personnel. They were supporting him as a presidential candidate, the people who are anti-communist. So I think it's not that simple. I think there are many different factors in play. Basically, this former spy was elected by people who are today who profile themselves as pro-democratic, pro-Western, liberals, who are anti-communists. So, yeah, if you look at it from outside, it doesn't make any sense, but these are the facts.
I see. Maybe my final question is that due to your understanding of Hong Kong and China, what kind of advice that you can give to our fellow friends in Hong Kong and also in mainland China? How can they survive this kind of communist regimes, and how can hopes be maintained, and how can one remain positive in life?
I think it's very difficult to give advice because I think the situation is very different. Yeah, I think the Communist Party in China is very different to Communist Party which I experienced. I think what's happening in Hong Kong also, I think it's unprecedented. I have never experienced anything like that. So I think it's very difficult for me to give advice because, as I mentioned before, I think the worst time for communism or for our country was when communism came to power in 1949 and 1950s. That was a decade of real terror, that people were imprisoned, people there were also the people were executed. There was still death penalty at the time. I think that was really very, very dark period. 1960s, there was a little bit of hope in with Prague Spring, 1968. Actually, big hope. People were hoping that they can create communism with human faith. But because of the Soviet Union and Warsaw Pact invaded Czechoslovakia, this hope did not materialize. And then there was 1970s. It was a period of no, so-called normalization. So we were strongly under Soviet influence and a lot of restrictions. Again, you can say stronger pressure on societal pressure or pressure of Communist Party, and then again 1980s again like a little bit of relaxation. So I think when you go through decades, I think different people they have completely different experiences of communist regime, and basically I think I was what I experienced as a young person was towards the end. I didn't go through that. Dark period when communist regime took power. That was I think 1950s. That was the worst period, and I am afraid that I even don't want to say it, but I think in Hong Kong this is we are at the beginning. So I'm afraid that I would really like to be optimist and I really feel for Hong Kong because Hong Kong has been my home for 26 years. And I just hope for the best. I just hope for the best.
I see, which means you're saying something in a subtle way. You worry that it's just the beginning, which means the worst is yet to come.
I think when I follow news from Hong Kong, I'm sure you do as well. It's every day relentlessly some more bad news. It's just I just think, where does it stop? It must stop somewhere. And yeah, I think I can see that it will take some time before the turn. I hope that there will be some turn, but I think at the moment, I think the Communist Party is trying to solidify their power and their control. So I can see that again that the pressure is increasing at the moment. Having said that, I can see there's a lot of very strong and very brave people in Hong Kong. And when I can, I try to walk through Hong Kong. I don't take MTR or bus. Just walk around and just observe people, observe life, observe what's going on. And in March, I was walking around Wan Chai, around the immigration center, and suddenly I saw Mrs. Wong. Do you remember Mrs. Wong with her enormous British flag? The flag was, I think, twice her size. It was an enormous flag, and she was standing there with her flag again, after being arrested, after being in China for re-education, after being in prison in Hong Kong. She was back in March with that flag, with British flag. There was policemen talking to her, so I observed whether she was okay. She looked like she was okay. The policeman looked very polite and kind of like almost begging her to leave. And so I just passed by. Nobody stopped, you know, nobody stopped. Nobody said anything. But I was thinking maybe I should go back and see how it ended. And I could see that the policeman escorted her, very politely escorted her from the premises. So I think, when you see this, it's just amazing that some people still have courage and still don't give up. So
Surprised
I
that
was saying,
you just Wong Po Po, and that's
yeah.
it's really surprised that you know all these stories. I do hope that your experience can enlighten us, in different sense, because of course the things are not directly comparable, but the very fact that you all survived, which is a positive thing, and I do hope that history can eventually repeat itself.
I hope it will be better, and just don't give up, Hong Kong.
Thank you so much, Makato. Hope that we can meet up again someday, somewhere.
Thank you, Simon. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Bye
Thank
bye.
you. Bye bye.